You know, it's funny. We obsess over specs, we argue about clock speeds, and we compare terabytes.
Well, yeah.
We get into these wars about which processor architecture is superior. But in those quiet moments, you know, when you're just sitting there waiting for a render to finish or a massive file to copy,
The fan spins up.
exactly, you can almost feel the physics of it, the heat, the silence of a solid state drive versus the hum of the old spinning rust.
Right.
It's just so easy to forget that computing isn't abstract. It's a physical, high-speed machine.
It's a machine operating under the laws of thermodynamics and electricity. And today, I think we're stripping it down.
We're going right to the metal. We're doing a deep dive into foundations of computer hardware, storage, and processing. And look, I know our listeners, you guys know what a CPU is, you know what RAM is. We're not going to waste your time explaining that a mouse is an input device.
Right, yeah, we can skip the Computer Literacy 101 syllabus on this one.
We want to get into the architecture. We want to understand the bottleneck because that's what the source material really, really highlights. Computing is essentially a constant battle against bottlenecks.
That is the perfect way to frame it. I
Thank
mean,
you
it
all.
doesn't matter how fast your processor is if it can't get the data it needs.
Right.
And that brings us to the core framework of the text, which is the IPO model, input, process, output.
It sounds so simple, though. Almost too simple for modern tech.
Yeah.
I mean, does that basic loop actually still hold up when we're talking about like neural networks or massive server
Oh,
farms?
it absolutely holds up because it's the fundamental law of information flow. Input comes in, the machine does something to it, that's the process, and it sends it back out.
Okay.
But all the complexity, all the magic is hidden inside that process box. That's where the war for speed is won or lost.
So let's crack open that process box. We have the central processing unit and the memory, the brain and the
And they
workspace.
are locked in a very, very tight dance.
Okay, let's start with the brain, the CPU. The source throws around the standard stats, billions of tasks per second, but billions is just a number. What is actually happening in those nanoseconds? Because it's not just chaos, right? It's a very specific cycle.
It is. It's the machine cycle,
Yeah.
or sometimes called the instruction cycle. Fetch, decode, execute, store.
Okay, walk us through one loop of that. Let's say I press a key or a line of code triggers. What happens?
Okay, so step one, fetch. The CPU has to go out to the memory and grab the instruction. It's like a chef reaching into the pantry for a very specific ingredient.
And this is where the architecture really matters, right? Because the CPU isn't just reaching into a grab bag, it has to know exactly where to look.
Precisely. And this introduces the concept of registers. These are the real unsung heroes of processing speed. Registers are tiny, high-speed storage locations directly inside the CPU. They are the fastest memory in the entire system, by far.
The source material highlights a few specific ones. The memory address register, or
Right, the MAR.
the memory data register, MDR, and the instruction register, the IR.
Right. So in that fetch phase, the CPU puts the address of the data it needs into the MAR, the memory address register. It's effectively saying, I need the data located at this specific coordinate.
And here's where I found the text really interesting, and honestly, where I had a bit of an aha moment about system limits. The capacity of your memory isn't just about how many chips you can fit on a motherboard.
Yeah.
It's dictated by the width of that register.
It absolutely is. Think of the MAR like a zip code system. If your postal service only allows for two-digit zip codes, you can only ever deliver mail to 99 different neighborhoods.
Doesn't matter how many houses you build.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if you build 1,000 more neighborhoods. The mailman literally cannot address them.
So if the MAR is 32 bits wide, the CPU can only see or address 4 gigabytes of RAM. That's the hard limit.
That was the 4 gigabyte ceiling we all dealt with in the 32-bit era. Moving to 64-bit expanded that addressable space exponentially. I mean, it gave us a zip code long enough to address every grain of sand on Earth.
Oh, wow. Okay, so back to the cycle. We fetch the instruction using the MAR. Now we have the data.
Right. The data comes back from RAM and it sits in the MDR, the memory data register. Then it moves to the instruction register to be decoded. The
Decoded.
control unit looks at it and translates it from binary into an actual command. Add these numbers or move this pixel.
And finally, execute.
The arithmetic logic unit, the ALU, does the math. It crunches the numbers. And then step four, store. This result gets written back to memory.
And it does this billions of times a second.
Billions. But
Yeah.
here's the kicker. The CPU is screaming fast. It is operating at speeds that are, I mean, they're hard to comprehend. But it has a problem.
What's that?
It's lonely.
Lonely.
It needs data to work on. And if the component supplying that data is slow, the CPU is just sitting there idling. It's a Ferrari stuck in school zone traffic.
Which brings us to the workspace, random access memory, RAM.
The primary storage.
Now, the text lists a whole genealogy of RAM types, DRAM, FPM, EDO, BDO. It's just an alphabet soup.
It really is.
But I don't want to just list acronyms. I want to know why we needed so many versions. What was the problem they were trying to solve?
They were trying to solve that traffic problem I just mentioned. They were trying to solve the wait state.
The wait state? That sounds like purgatory for a processor.
It basically is. In the early days with basic DRAM, that's dynamic RAM, the CPU would ask for data, and then it would have to literally stop and wait for the RAM to find it and send it back. The RAM was asynchronous. It wasn't running on the same clock as the CPU.
So the CPU is running at its own beat, and the RAM is just dragging behind, completely out of sync.
Exactly. So engineers tried all these tricks. Fast page mode, FPM, and extended data out, EDO. They were all attempts to keep the data flowing a bit smoother. But the real revolution, the one that defined modern computing, was SDRAM.
Synchronous DRAM.
Yes. Synchronous. They finally tied the memory speed to the system clock.
So now the chef and the pantry runner are moving to the exact same metronome.
That is a perfect analogy. The CPU knows exactly when the data will arrive, so it doesn't have to waste cycles waiting around. It streamlined the entire pipeline.
And from there, we got to DDR double data rate, which implies we're doing, what, two things at once?
Sort of, yeah. Think of the system clock like a wave. It goes up and it goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional RAM would only transfer data on the way up. The rising edge.
Okay.
DDR was this brilliant engineering hack that said, why don't we send data on the rising edge and on the falling edge?
Doubling the bandwidth without actually increasing the clock speed.
That's it. That's why DDR was such a massive leap, and that's why we're still using iterations of it today with DDR4 and DDR5.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about maximizing that bus width and timing to keep the CPU fed.
Okay, so we have the CPU blazing through instructions. We have SDRAM shoveling data into the registers as fast as the clock allows. But eventually, the power goes out.
And the workspace is wiped clean, RAM is volatile, the electrons dissipate, and the data just vanishes.
So we need the vault, secondary storage. This is where the operating system, your photos, and your games actually live.
Correct. Non-volatile storage.
Jill, we have to talk about the transition we've all lived through from the hard disk drive, the HDD, to the solid state drive, the SSD. But I want to focus on the mechanism.
Okay.
Because I think people take the SSD for granted.
We do. The HDD was a marvel in mechanics. You had these magnetic platters spinning at, 7,200 to 10,000 RPM.
Right.
You had a read-write head hovering nanometers above the surface, darting back and forth.
The seek time.
That was the bottleneck. The physical latency of moving a little arm across the spinning disk, it's glacial compared to the speed of a CPU.
So the SSD comes along and eliminates the moving parts. It uses NAND flash. But here's the thing that always worries me about SSDs, and the source touches on this. They aren't immortal.
No, they are not. In fact, in one specific way, they are more fragile than HDDs.
Explain that. Because yeah. I drop my SSD, and it's fine. I drop an HDD, and it's a paperweight.
Physically, yes, SSDs are robust,
right.
But chemically.
Right.
Every single time you write data to a cell in an SSD, you are forcing electrons through an insulator.
Okay.
And over time, that insulator breaks down. It physically wears out.
So you have a finite number of writes.
You do. It's a massive number, usually petabytes for modern drives, but it exists. The controller on the drive has to play this constant game of wear leveling, moving data around to make sure one spot doesn't get burned out too fast.
It's a consumable resource.
It is, but the speed trade-off is just so worth it. I mean, we're talking about cutting boot times from minutes to seconds. It removed the biggest bottleneck in consumer computing for a long time.
But speaking of bottlenecks in storage, this is where the source material threw me a bit of a curveball.
Ah.
We're talking about the cutting edge of tech, and then suddenly we're talking about tape.
Magnetic tape.
I mean, I picture a reel-to-reel computer from some 1960s sci-fi movie. Or an old cassette tape. Why is this still in the textbook?
Because it's still the backbone of the internet's memory. Google, Amazon, banks, they all use massive tape libraries.
But why? If SSDs are so fast, why go back to a technology that you have to physically wind and unwind?
Two reasons. Density and security. The source mentions LTO linear tape open. A single modern LTO cartridge can hold 30 terabytes of compressed data.
30 terabytes in the palm of your hand.
And it costs a fraction of what hard drives cost per gigabyte. But the real killer feature, it's the air gap.
The air gap, that's a security term.
It is. If you have your backups on a hard drive that's plugged into a server and ransomware hits that server.
Oh, it encrypts your backups too.
It encrypts your backups. Game over.
But a tape cartridge.
A tape cartridge sits on a shelf. It is physically disconnected from the network. It cannot be hacked. It cannot be encrypted remotely. It is the ultimate defense against cyber attacks.
That is fascinating. We think of tape as obsolete, but its flaw being offline is actually its greatest asset in, what, 2026?
Exactly. Sometimes high tech isn't the solution. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just need physics.
So we've covered the components. But components fail. Drives die. RAM corrupts. How do we build a system that survives that? The text introduces RAID.
Redundant arrays of independent disks.
I feel like RAID is one of those terms people hear but don't implement because it sounds scary.
It's intimidating, yeah.
But it's really just about trade-offs.
It's just managing risk.
Let's look at the two big ones, RAID 0 and RAID 1. The source defines RAID 0 as striping.
Right. Imagine you have a bucket of water. That's your file. In RAID 0, you pour half the water into bucket A and half into bucket B simultaneously.
So you can fill the buckets twice as fast.
Yes. Performance doubles. Your read and write speeds are incredible.
Yeah.
Gamers, video editors, they love RAID 0.
There's a trap.
A huge trap. If you drop bucket A,
you can't drink half a glass of water. The file is gone.
It's gone. If you lose one drive in a RAID 0 array, you lose everything. There is zero redundancy. It's living on the edge.
So that's the performance side. What about the reliability side? RAID 1.
That's mirroring. This is for the accountant, the database manager. You pour the water into bucket A, and the system automatically pours an exact copy into bucket B.
So your write speeds aren't really any faster.
No. But if drive A dies, the system doesn't even blink. It just switches over to drive B. You have 100% redundancy.
But you also pay for it. You buy two 4TB drives, but you only get 4TB of usable space.
That's the cost of insurance.
And I know there are more complex versions, RAID 5, RAID 10, that try to balance these, but really it all comes down to that fundamental choice, right? Speed or safety.
That's the eternal question of systems architecture. You can't usually have both without spending an absolute fortune.
So to bring this all back together, we've gone from the nanosecond switching of CPU registers all the way to the air-gapped security of a plastic tape cartridge on a shelf.
It's quite a spectrum, isn't it?
And I think the big takeaway for me isn't just knowing what the acronyms stand for. It's seeing the computer not as a magic box, but as a pipeline. When your computer is slow, it's not tired. It has a bottleneck somewhere.
Exactly. Is the CPU starving for data because the RAM is full? Is the RAM waiting on a mechanical hard drive to spin up? Or is the whole system choking because you're trying to edit 8K video on a single drive instead of a RAID array?
Once you understand the architecture, that IPO model and the relationships between these parts, you stop guessing and you start diagnosing.
You move from being a user to an operator.
And I want to leave everyone with one thought. We talked about that tape drive. The 30 terabyte LTO cartridge.
My favorite part of this.
We spend so much time chasing the new, the fastest DDR5, the newest NVMe SSD, but the backbone of our digital history, our bank records, our emails, the archive of the internet itself, is likely sitting on magnetic tape, a technology that feels like it belongs in a museum.
It's a reminder that newer isn't always better.
Mm-hmm.
Better is whatever solves the specific problem you have. And if the problem is store this for 30 years without electricity, well, high-tech silicon fails, and old-school magnetism wins.
Something to think about next time you're frustrated that your cutting-edge laptop is lagging. Sometimes the old ways are the only ways.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for deep diving with us. Go check your backups, preferably on something that isn't connected to the internet.
Always good advice. Goodbye, everyone.